Chapter 4. I could not wait to congratulate Major Smythe, so I called him from the command chair. "Major, that was outstanding. That was a textbook operation. Please convey my congratulations to your team."
"Thank you, Colonel," Smythe replied, a bit less happily than I had hoped. This wasn't just his British reserve. He was bothered about something.
"That may have gone a bit too perfectly."
"What?"
I asked in alarm, glancing at the main bridge display. The Flying Dutchman had sustained nothing worse than 4 major cannon hits, which our shields had dealt with. There was no sign of pursuit, so...
"Oh, shit."
My face fell along with my spirits.
"You think that was too easy, because it was a setup?"
My mind raced through terrifying scenarios. Had the Elder device Smythe brought on board been replaced with an explosive that could soon tear our ship apart?
How?
For that to happen, the Wargalan must have known we were coming, but how could...
The Worm.
Had the Worm somehow communicated with the outside universe without Skippy's knowledge?
If so, then the secret of humans flying around in a pirate ship and manipulating wormholes was out, and humanity on Earth and Paradise was screwed without...
Smythe blessedly interrupted my racing thoughts.
"Set up? No, sir. I only meant this is the first major combat operation we've been involved with that went almost exactly according to plan. I keep thinking Lady Fortune will get us back for that favor someday."
"Oh."
I slumped in my chair with relief.
Crisis averted for the moment.
Although my panic had brought up an issue I needed to discuss with Skippy.
"Major, bring the conduit, thing up here."
"I don't know if it will fit through some of the passageways, sir," Smythe warned.
"It's rather long. There are some pieces attached to it that I am afraid to remove."
"Understood. Good point. Keep it in the docking bay, then. I'll bring Skippy down there. He says he needs to be close to the thing for it to work." Leaving the bridge, I saw Chang step from the CIC to replace me in the command chair. When I got to Skippy's escape pod man cave, he was chilling as usual.
"Hey, Skippy."
"Hey, Joe."
He also was not as happy as I expected him to be.
"What's wrong?"
I asked as I unstrapped him and picked up the satchel we used for carrying him around because he didn't like being touched by filthy monkeys.
"I thought you would be thrilled that we recovered a conduit thingy for you, and none of us got killed."
Down the passageway, I walked quickly, almost jogging. There was no sign of any ships pursuing us, but if we got into trouble, I did not want to waste any time bringing Skippy back to his full, awesome Skippiness.
"I am very happy that no monkeys were harmed in this operation, Joe. My enthusiasm is on hold right now because I don't want to get my hopes up."
"Okay, I can understand that, because you never know what could go wrong. Hey, on the subject of things that can go wrong, how much do you know about what the Worm is doing in there?"
"Let me check. It has just finished binge-watching Downton Abbey, and now it is on season 1 of Breaking Bad."
"What?
It's bored, so it..."
"Oh, for crying out loud, Joe, I was screwing with you."
"Oh, yeah, well, that's what I thought."
Mentally, I had been picturing a worm sprawled on a couch, empty beer cans and potato chip bags littering the floor as it chilled watching TV.
"How the hell should I know what it is doing? Trying to kill me is all I know. Duh! I can tell it is attempting to get past the barrier I constructed."
"Well, that's not good, Skippy.
How do you know the worm isn't doing something bad like calling for help?"
"Calling for help? What?"
"Well, I was thinking that worm could be monitoring us. It could know we are humans, that our being out here is a secret, so it could be calling in reinforcements."
"No, you dum-dum. You think other worms are going to crawl across space to the ship and attack us?" he scoffed.
"Not other worms, Skippy. The worm could let, like, the Maxalks know where we are and where we're going so they can intercept us. All the worm cares about is that it kills you, right? If the Maxalks destroy this ship, it makes the worm's job a lot easier because you will never find one of these conduit things."
"Shit. Damn it, Joe, I hadn't thought about that."
His voice was shaky.
"Crap, you dum-dum, you should have mentioned this earlier."
"I just thought of it.
So it could happen?"
Hearing that brought me to a halt in the passageway.
"Let me think. No, I don't think so. I don't see how that could happen. The worm, so far as I know, has never accessed my systems. It destroys, Joe. It doesn't take control of anything. I do not think it would or could call the Maxalks. You telling me you don't think it could happen without having any way for you to know does not reassure me, Skippy. I'm not bursting with confidence either, Joe. Crap. Well, thanks a lot. You really ruined my freaking day, Mr. Buzzkill. Yes, that is the important thing here, Skippy. Not that aliens could arrive at any moment, tear this ship apart, and destroy my home planet. What is truly important is that you are having a pleasant day. Sorry. After you kill the worm, you can see if it sent out a signal? No, the worm would cover its tracks. So there's no way for us to know if the worm has been calling for help? Well, there is one way to tell if the worm ratted us out. After I fix myself and kill the worm, we can go back to Earth. If your home planet is a smoking ruin, we can assume the worm told somebody about your secret. Shit. I'm just saying. Yeah, thanks a freaking lot. Ah, there is good news, Joe. The worm is Elder technology. It was designed and created at a time when only the Elders inhabited the galaxy. The Elders would not have programmed it to call for assistance from other species because there were no other species back then. That is pretty thin to hang my hopes on, Skippy. It's all I've got, Joe. Come on, get moving. We need an active conduit to fix me or we don't have any options. Yeah, I agreed as I picked him up carefully. I'll bring you down to the docking bay so you can check it yourself. Crap! Skippy shouted in disgust after we got the stolen conduit hooked up to a proper power source. This damn thing is totally busted! Ooh, I hate those stinking octopuses! Busted? The Wagalin did something to it? The Wagalin or the Bosphorok before them? Or hell, the Kristang during the brief time they owned the place? Is it something we can fix? No. Before you ask me a bunch of stupid time-wasting questions, the problem is not with the device itself. This thing is no longer a conduit, because its connection to higher space-times has been severed. That makes me think the rotten Bosphorok must have been the ones to break it. The Wagalin would not have any idea how to do that. Even the Bosphorok likely did it by accident without knowing what they were doing. Crap. This sucks. I looked up at Hans Chotek, overall mission commander and breakfast cereal spokesmodel. His usual expression of mild displeasure when dealing with me had turned into annoyed, exasperated, and strong displeasure.
Colonel Bishop, this entire operation was a waste of time and resources.
We had no way of knowing that, sir. Skippy came to my rescue. Mr. Chotek, he began, and everyone including Chotek stared at Skippy's beer can in surprise. Skippy rarely used Chotek's real name, and had never referred to our commander as Mister. There is no way Joe could have known this damned thing would be busted, because I didn't know the conduit here would be inoperable. That was always a risk. I am sorry that personnel were placed at risk, but there is nothing we can do about that now. We have to chalk this up to karma and move on to Plan B.
Such should be our motto, Chotek said sourly. Something to the effect of Plan B is our Plan A.
Yes, sir, I agreed, and I really did mean that. As a motto, it was not inspirational, but what it lacked in motivational ability, it made up for it in accuracy.
You do have a Plan B, Colonel? Chotek asked with a skeptically raised eyebrow.
Yes, sir.
First, please explain why we didn't consider this alternative before raidings of Wagalin.
Because, I tried to keep my expression neutral so fear did not show on my face. Plan B involves us raiding the Theranin. After I gave the bad news to Chotek and he went back to his chocolatey count castle to hem and haw and wring his hands and agonize and make my life hell before making the obvious and only decision he could make, I went to the galley for a glass of ice-cold lemonade, because being on the bridge during the operation had me tremendously thirsty. The galley was full of soldiers and pilots excitedly chatting about their experience. I assured them that although we had failed to find a working conduit, I considered the operation to be a complete success. Taking a second glass of lemonade back to my office, I downloaded tactical data of the air battle, hoping to learn what worked and what didn't. The pilots involved and Desai would later conduct a full debriefing that I would attend eagerly. This was my opportunity to view the raw data and imagine I was there. Later,
I could experience the air battle in a flight simulator when it would truly feel as if I were there.
What the hell? I mumbled. What is it, Joe?
Lieutenant Reed is certifiably insane, Skippy. She hovered her dropship inside a tornado. Technically, it was a dust devil, Joe, not a tornado. However, I do agree that a strong love for doing crazy shit seems to be a prerequisite for being part of this crew.
Hey, you got a minute?
Sure, what's up?
Barsoom. Now that the battle is over, I had time to examine sensor data about that planet. It is a puzzle. Barsoom should have a much thicker atmosphere. The planet has a strong magnetic field capable of repelling solar wind particles that would strip away an atmosphere. Given the surface gravity, the atmosphere should be as thick as Earth's, perhaps even more thick, considering the level of carbon dioxide.
Okay, I replied distractedly, watching the air battle scroll across my laptop screen.
That's a puzzle for sure.
My laptop screen blacked out.
Joe, are you listening to me? He asked peevishly. I'm trying to tell you something important, something that scares the shit out of me.
No, Skippy, I was not really listening. Sorry about that. You have my full attention now, I assured him, as I didn't have any choice after he killed my laptop.
Barsoom should have a nice thick atmosphere, geology or, planet science stuff. I struggled with the proper terms. It's not my thing. Shouldn't you be talking with the science team about this?
Frankly, Joe, it would be difficult for me to care less about atmospheric conditions on Barsoom, except that I suspect the thin atmosphere there is not natural.
That did get my full attention, making me sit up straight in my chair.
Not natural? You mean someone, like, stole the air?
Not exactly. The lack of atmospheric pressure is not the only odd thing about Barsoom. Based on geological survey data from the Wagolin, Kristang, and Max Oaks, that planet once had a relatively pleasant climate, with abundant native life. Oceans covered half the surface, but that water has mostly boiled away.
Oh, shit.
Did Barsoom get pushed out of its original orbit like Newark?
No. Good guess, though. That's what I thought at first. The thin atmosphere isn't the only puzzle. One hemisphere has a cluster of deep and extensive craters that appear to be caused by meteor impacts, but after examining the data closely, I realized only some of the craters were made by impacts. The three largest craters are not craters at all. They are where large sections of the surface were scooped away.
Scooped away like transported into another dimension?
We've seen that same thing on several moons that contained Elder facilities.
Exactly.
I am now certain Barsoom once contained one or more large Elder facilities, perhaps even a settlement or city. My analysis is based on the fact that the Maxalks did find shattered remains of Elder facilities and equipment outside the three main craters. I say shattered because whatever escaped being scooped away was subjected to extensive and powerful orbital bombardment.
Joe, someone used Elder technology to erase almost all traces of whatever the Elders had at that location.
Orbital bombardment? You're sure those secondary impacts aren't just meteors?
They were not caused by meteors, and I won't bother explaining how I know because the science would be lost on you. The secondary craters were caused by relativistic impactors.
That I did understand.
You mean like a super powerful railgun?
A super duper powerful railgun.
Wow.
I tried to imagine even a tiny object traveling at half the speed of light hitting a planet. Such an event would make a nuke look like a sneeze.
Crap. Next you're going to tell me all this bad stuff happened to Barsoom around the same time that Newark was pushed out of orbit and somebody blew up moons that had Elder facilities.
No, that would be interesting, but merely another data point.
What scares me is that Barsoom lost its atmosphere and the surface was bombarded long before disaster struck Newark. I wish now that we had more time at Barsoom so I would not have to rely on the amateurish data collected by the idiot Max Oaks. My best estimate is the event occurred between 90 and 130 million years ago.
I whistled. Newark got pushed out of orbit about 2.7 million years ago?
So the bad guys, whoever they are, they were around way back then?
No, his avatar shook its head slowly.
My internal subroutines are still preventing me from recalling accurate timelines. However, I am certain this disaster struck Barsoom while the Elders still inhabited this galaxy. In fact, the elders did not depart their physical existence for many millions of years after the event on Barsoom. Holy shit. Yeah, now you see why this scares me. A violent act was committed against the elders while the elders were still here.
This changes things, Skippy.
Uh-huh. He was so frightened that he didn't bother to make a snarky remark. The story gets worse, if possible. The technology required to strip away Barsoom's atmosphere, in the manner data indicates the event happened, is technology currently available only to a sentinel. Someone, something, tore a hole in a star and created a massive, focused solar flare. I say focused because only Barsoom was affected, not the third planet in the system. A powerful solar flare traveled outward, scorching Barsoom and blowing away most of its atmosphere. At the same time, elder facilities on the surface were scooped away into another space-time. Then, whatever facilities remained were pounded to dust from orbit. My head was spinning. We raided that elder site under the dome the Wergalan built. Why wasn't that destroyed also? I now think that site was placed on Barsoom later as a monitoring station. Monitoring? Whoa. Someone used Elder Tech to wipe out Elder facilities on Barsoom, then installed Elder Tech to monitor the place? Why? More important, who? For why, it is likely that whoever attacked Barsoom monitored activity on that planet to make certain nothing survived. The obvious choice for who is the Elders themselves, although that makes zero, absolutely zero, sense. We know Newark was pushed out of orbit long after the Elders departed, so that event must have been caused by an unknown third party. But the idea of a third party coexisting with the Elders and surviving long after the Elders left the galaxy is simply not possible. Not possible. Unless everything I know about the Elders is wrong. Completely wrong. And even that doesn't make sense. If there was a third party inhabiting this galaxy for over 100 million years, where are they now? Why haven't we found relics of their civilization? The Elders left extensive relics scattered around the galaxy. There is no evidence of a star-faring species in this galaxy before the Rindaloo other than the Elders themselves. I can't picture the Elders sitting back and allowing anyone to blow away one of their planets. Crap, Skippy. We had enough of a mystery about Newark. Now we have a totally different, maybe unconnected mystery about Barsoom? There is one connection between the events at Newark and Barsoom, not just the level of technology involved. The connection is the type of technology involved as well. Joe, now that I know about Barsoom, I think something similar may have happened to other planets in this galaxy around the same time as Barsoom. Knowing about Barsoom allows me to make sense of data collected mostly by the Rindaloo. They were puzzled by catastrophes which struck multiple sites across the galaxy roughly 100 million years ago. One of their theories was that the Milky Way galaxy collided with and absorbed a dwarf galaxy at that time. The new mass passing through the Milky Way disrupted orbits and caused havoc like comets swinging in from distant orbits to collide with inner planets, planets being ejected from their star systems, even stars being pulled into orbit by larger stars. The Rindaloo discarded the dwarf galaxy theory because it didn't explain large areas scooped out of planets and moons and other phenomena they couldn't understand. That remark puzzled me. Did the Rindaloo know about Newark and Barsoom? I don't know, Skippy admitted. Unfortunately, my only source of data about the Rindaloo comes from other species. I have had no direct contact with the spiders. The Rindaloo traditionally are reluctant to share data and technology. Joe, that is a very good point.
It is? I didn't know what point I had made.
Yes, we should somehow get access to a Rindaloo data archive. Crap, I should have thought about doing that a long time ago. We have serious questions. The spiders may have answers.
I did not like the sound of that.
Hey, how about we concentrate on one problem at a time?
Okay, sure, he sighed.
The current problem is our need to get a conduit so I can fix myself before we can do anything else.
I know the current problem is persuading Count Chocula to approve us raiding a Theranan star system.
Ugh! He grunted. Crap, now you're asking the impossible.
This time, Skippy, I understand why he is reluctant to approve this operation. There were several reasons why raiding Barsoom had been Plan A, and our next target was Plan B. The op at Barsoom involved us tangling with a small Wagalan outpost, a relatively soft target of a lower technology species. Plan B required us to jump into a Theranin star system. The system was centered on an orange dwarf star and had no habitable planets. The inner worlds were small, lifeless rocks, with one large and two smaller gas giants forming the outer band of the system. Unlike Barsoom, where millions of Wargalan lived on one planet of that system, our second target had no permanent Theranin presence. That is, no permanent presence that Skippy knew about. There is an unmanned refueling station in low orbit around the big gas giant, but that station supposedly was used infrequently because the star system was only one wormhole away from major ship servicing and fueling facilities. Our actual target, identified by Skippy, was on a moon orbiting the outermost gas giant. It was an Elder installation very similar to the one on Barsoom. Yeah, like the one on Barsoom, where we had taken a risk to steal a device that didn't work. Why did Skippy think we should take the even greater risk of going to our second target, which I decided to call Bravo for lack of a better name? Because Skippy had assured us the conduit at Bravo was functional, or it had been at one time. The Advanced Research Directorate of the Theranin had done extensive, though completely unproductive, testing on the Elder installation, and Skippy had access to their testing data. Although the Theranin had not learned anything useful because they had no idea how Elder technology worked, their tests told Skippy the conduit was still active, or it had been active the last time the Theranin ran tests, which was about 53,000 years ago. Since that time, the Elder site had rested undisturbed, almost forgotten. Security at the site was limited to one surveillance and defense satellite. Skippy knew that because 4,000 years ago, the Theranin had an internal dispute over who should pay the cost of maintaining and upgrading that satellite. In the end, ARD had ponied up the resources, grumbling about it for years afterward. So on the surface, Bravo looked like a soft target. It was in an uninhabited star system. Skippy knew exactly where the lone defense satellite was, in geosynchronous orbit directly above the Elder site. We could jump in practically on top of the satellite, jamming its signals while we sliced it apart with our maser cannons. We would time our jump so the satellite was above the side of the planet facing away from the star, concealing the gamma-ray burst of our inbound jump from being detected by the fueling station orbiting the big gas giant. There, we had a bit of luck, because our target and the big gas giant were almost 170 degrees apart in their orbits of the star. Any stray photons from our gamma rays would not reach the fueling station for 2.5 hours. That should be plenty of time for us to fly down to the Elder installation, remove the item we want, fly back up to the Dutchman, and jump away. Simple and easy, right? It should be simple and easy. But nothing the merry band of pirates did was ever simple or easy. We were bound to encounter surprises that would bite us in the ass, and a surprise provided by the Theranin would be an order of magnitude worse than any surprise the Wargalan could have thrown at us. Still, our raid at Barsoom, although fruitless, had been nearly a textbook operation, considering the textbook was being written as we conducted each action. Maybe, I privately dared hope, our luck was changing for the better. Man, was I ever wrong about that. The Wargalan named Uslet Nabanu willed himself not to tremble in front of the two Theranin who now occupied the repaired dome. The Theranin did not have a physically imposing presence, being only 3/4 the height of an average adult Wargalan. Theranin supposedly were proud of the efficiency and superiority of their compact body mass, but Wargalan had learned over the eons the superior species were sensitive about their diminutive stature when face-to-face with other species. So Uslet had followed protocol and scrunched up his tentacles to pull himself down, making the two Theranin slightly above Uslet's eye level. Lowering the trunk of their central bodies was practiced by all Wargalan expected to encounter Theranin in close proximity. One advantage of the Theranin being clones was they were almost exactly the same height. There was no difference between the height of males and females in the patron species, and as far as Uslet had been able to tell under the shapeless coveralls worn by the aliens, there was little other difference between the two genders of Theranin.
It was not the height of the Theranin that intimidated Uslet and the five other Wergalin under the dome. It was not even the advanced technology of the Theranin, nor their visible cyborg enhancements. What made Uslet instinctively tremble from a place way down inside the still primitive parts of his brain was the hulking combat that accompanied each of the two Theranin. Not only did the combat loom over his scrunched-down form, the combats resembled a nasty predator on the Wergalin homeworld, a creature which still haunted the imaginations of all Wergalin. Sometimes Uslet wondered if the Theranin had deliberately given their cyborg-controlled combat companions an appearance that frightened and repulsed their clients. Over his years of dealing with the Theranin, Uslet had come to the conclusion that the patrons of the Kristang had done exactly that. Whether the combats elicited a fear response from the Kristang was unknown. The lizard warriors would never admit to fearing anything in the galaxy. Arrival of the Theranin starship in orbit had come as a complete shock to Uslet and his fellows. A visit by the Theranin was almost more unwelcome than the ship that had raided the planet and stolen a priceless Elder artifact. The Theranin ship was already in low orbit, with dropships descending rapidly toward the surface before the battered Wergalin garrison received a signal from the third planet. The cyborgs had jumped in there first and jumped away soon after learning of the raid. The Theranin presence in the star system was not in response to the raid. The cyborgs had not been aware of recent events until they were informed by the Wergalin leadership on the third planet. Whatever the original purpose of the Theranin visiting the star system, they were now wholly focused on investigating the raid. And focused on punishing those Wergalin who had allowed the unknown raiders to steal an Elder artifact that had been entrusted to the Wergalin by their patrons, the Bosphorok. Technically, customarily, legally, all authority to punish the actions of the Wergalin rested solely with their patrons, the Bosphorok. But that would not stop the Theranin from taking action. Correcting the behavior of the Wergalin would bring shame on the Bosphorok, which truly was the main reason the Theranin would insist on severe punishment for those Wergalin involved in the failed defense of the Elder Site. Fortunately for Uslet, he had been on the other side of the planet when the raid occurred, and he was a civilian administrator rather than a military officer. Part of the blame would attach itself to him anyway, but he would likely escape with his life. He hoped. The pair of Theranin cyborgs, usually flatly emotionless on the exterior when speaking with other species, were allowing themselves to show distinct anger.
"Your forces were completely shamefully unprepared," said the Theranin leader, a female designated Liv-426.
"I am further shamed to agree, Eminence," Uslet responded automatically, for one never disagreed with a Theranin. Not if, that is, one wanted to live. Theranin had been known to retaliate against dozens of Wergalin for a perceived slight from one. Underneath his carefully placid exterior, Uslet seethed with outraged anger. Wergalin forces on the planet had been adequately prepared for the most likely threat scenario. With additional aircraft stationed there for training, the force structure was more than adequate for any of the attacks thought most likely. It was unfair of the Theranin to criticize the Wergalin for failing to protect the Elder Site from an overwhelming attack. An Elder Site, Uslet burned to say, that the Bosphorok had abandoned as a useless relic not worthy of protecting. Uslet said nothing about his private thoughts. The Theranin leader leaned forward slightly, as did the menacing combat.
"Your guards here were clumsy and cowardly, and your pilots failed to follow basic air combat principles. We are again, and as always, greatly disappointed by the utter worthlessness of your species, despite all the advances you have been provided by your superiors,"
Liv-426 continued. "Advantages?" A muscle on Uslet's back rippled in anger before he forced it to relax. Any technological advances the Wergalin had made had come from observing and reverse-engineering equipment from other species, or by taking in battle, stealing, or buying technology from species such as the Kristang. The Bosphorok had done little to advance the capabilities of the Wergalin, and the Theranin had actively sought to stunt the technological advancement of any lesser species. Uslet voiced none of his thoughts. It was not necessary.
He knew the Theranan despised his lowly species, just as he was sure they knew he and all his fellows hated the Theranan. Ritualistically, he bowed and said the proper words.
It is a great burden to be part of a people who continue to disappoint such great ones as yourself. Your commander will, of course, remove herself from future operations as a result of her failure here, Liv 426 announced dismissively, as if announcing the impending death of a sentient individual who had done her best under impossible circumstances was not even worth mentioning. Under the Theranan, military commanders of client species who failed were expected to kill themselves as atonement for their failure and as an example to others. Uslet thought privately that policy only led to Wargallan commanders who either took no risks in battle or were never able to learn from their mistakes. And that, Uslet thought, may be exactly why the Theranan demanded the death of Wargallan commanders who suffered defeats. If client commanders were allowed to learn and gain wisdom, experience, and perspective, those clients may grow in strength and someday threaten the Theranan. Uslet kept those types of thoughts to himself, for his own safety and the survival of his species.
"Our commander will pay for her failure per our standard practice," he replied with a bow, wondering if at that moment the commander were already dead.
"Leave us," Liv 426 waved a hand, and her combat companion mimicked the gesture. As the primitive Wargallan bowed low and backed away, Liv 426 addressed her companion through a cranial implant, the preferred method of communication between Theranan. Liv 426's throat already ached and felt dry from the unfamiliar act of speaking using her vocal cords.
Thex 1138, analysis?
Thex 1138, a male who to non-Theranan eyes appeared almost identical to his female companion, responded without turning toward his leader.
The data provided by the Wargallan was nearly complete and unaltered. They only edited out the slowness of their initial response. It is curious. Either they do not care that we see how incompetent their forces here were, or they know we can determine the truth independently.
Upon arrival, the Theranan destroyer had demanded all available data on the recent engagement, and the Wargallan had complied swiftly, if not entirely truthfully. Receiving a data package from the Wargallan was a mere formality, because the Theranan had long ago fully infiltrated the data systems of their client species.
"The attackers appear to be Kristang, or," he transmitted an emotional overlay of bemusement, "they wanted the Wargallan to think they were being raided by Kristang."
"How so?"
"Analysis of flight characteristics of the attacking airspace craft matches those of known Kristang types almost exactly."
"Almost."
"Conclusion. Either the Kristang have enhanced capability airspace craft, or the attackers used ships of technology beyond that of the Kristang, and artificially restricted flight capabilities to mimic Kristang technology."
"Consistent with Kristang using stolen Theranan technology?"
Liv 426 asked without turning to look at her companion.
"Consistent with someone using technology of our development level," Thex 1138 clarified.
"Perhaps there is an additional level of deception involved. The attackers may have wished us to believe they were Kristang. Perhaps the attackers were Bosphorok in disguise."
"No. If the Bosphorok realized something here was of importance to them, they could simply have ordered the Wargallan to deliver it to them. This is Bosphorok territory," Liv 426 reminded her companion.
"Technically, their ship should have requested permission from the Bosphorok to visit the Wargallan star system, but relations between the two erstwhile peers and allies had deteriorated to the point where Theranan's central processing had ordered warships to conduct recon missions in Bosphorok territory to keep an eye on their allies."
"Their ground team?"
"Again, consistent with Kristang, with anomalies. They wore standard Kristang light battle armor. However, all of the attackers were on the short side for Kristang warriors, and they moved slowly and clumsily.
Their legs," Thex 1138 added, "bent in the correct direction for Kristang."
"So the ground team at least was not Bosphorok," Liv 426 observed.
Having evolved from birds, the Bosphorax's ankles were where other bipedal species had knees, making it appear their legs bent in the opposite direction. No Bosphorax could fit inside a Krestang armored suit, for a variety of anatomical reasons. Ruhar? It is possible the attackers were Ruhar, Thex 1138 agreed, although the emotional subtext of his transmission implied skepticism. Leader, there might not have been a ground team at all. Those armored suits could have been remotely controlled. If that is the case, then any species could have been involved. Even the insect-like Gerapta, he added to himself. That is insightful analysis, Liv 426 praised her companion. Their starship, what conclusions have you reached? It was stealthed, of course, and Wargalin's sensor coverage was shamefully inadequate, so information is limited. Again, on the surface, the flight profile is consistent with a Krestang starship. On the surface? Although all their communication was through cranial data links, Liv 426's lips bent upward in a smile. Based on a rough estimate of the attacking ship's mass, it must have been a Krestang heavy cruiser or battle cruiser. Trace gases recovered are inconclusive. They roughly meet the molecular profile to be expected for a Krestang capital ship, but could also be one of our own ships. Thex 1138's shoulders lifted in a slight shrug. Trace gas analysis was not determinative. The jump drive signature was very curious. In what way? It had all the characteristics of a Krestang unit, right down to the sloppy way discoherent radiation leaked at both ends of the jump wormhole. But it was too perfectly distinctive. It was as if someone wished to mask their drive as a Krestang piece of junk and pulled together stereotypical characteristics randomly. All Krestang jump drives are flawed in some way. The drive of this ship was too flawed. It could be a drive that is poorly maintained in a manner shocking even for Krestang, or a Krestang ship that sought to mask its own signature. That is not what you think, is it? Liv 426 did not need Thex 1138 to send an emotional subtext to read her underling's thoughts. No, leader. I believe it more likely the ship was not Krestang at all. That would explain how it got all the way here. No single Krestang starship was capable of crossing the vast gulfs of interstellar space on its own. Rarely, the Krestang had been known to use multiple disposable ships to assist one ship in traveling between stars, discarding burned-out drive modules along the way. That event was rare because of the extreme expense and because almost half the ships attempting such a journey failed to reach their destination. Mostly, the Krestang relied on the Theranin for interstellar transport. Liv 426 knew no Theranin military ship had brought Krestang to the star system, and no legitimate civilian transport ship would take on a contract to bring Krestang there. That left far too many possibilities. The Theranin's own Advanced Research Directorate was known to play dirty tricks the military was not made aware of. If they for some reason wanted to steal the Elder artifact from the Wargalin, the ARD might have hired Krestang mercenaries and provided them with transport. Or, the Krestang could have simply paid for a ride on a Theranin smuggler ship. Making the puzzle more complicated was the Krestang practice of hiding away warships with crews in cold sleep. The raiding ship could have lain dormant for decades, even centuries, until activated by a code message unwittingly delivered by any passing ship. Disgraced warriors, youngest sons without prospects, and minor clans of falling fortune were known to hide starships in the asteroid belt or Oort cloud of vital star systems, with ships and crews dormant until their clan awakened them at the right moment for a sneak attack. Mercenary groups even parked such ships in space, waiting for tempting contracts for anyone who paid the exorbitant fees. In this case, Liv 426 thought it unlikely any Krestang had the patience or foresight to park a valuable ship in an unimportant Wargalin star system. The raiders could have been Gerapta. They could have been anyone. What else have you learned from your analysis? Liv 426 asked. If it was a heavy Krestang warship, they used only one maser cannon during the attack. Weapons fire was accurate, suspiciously accurate for Krestang. but the projected power was significantly less than main armament of the Krestang heavy cruiser, and too strong for secondary maser cannons. Liv-426 knew a beam from a maser cannon could be as distinctive as a fingerprint, identifying not only the type of maser cannon, but the individual cannon aboard a particular starship.
Possible identification?
No. Thex-1138 transmitted an emotional overlay of disappointment, irritation, and annoyance. If I had to guess, it is most similar to the maser battery of our older star carriers. But there are enough inconsistencies to rule that out. Unless that maser cannon was old, poorly maintained, and had been significantly altered during service. Liv-426 made the unnecessary gesture of turning her head to look directly at Thex-1138.
That would be consistent with a star carrier that had been captured by Krestang without access to spare parts and proper maintenance.
Both Thorana knew that central processing had warned all ships in the fleet to be alert for a rogue star carrier that was suspected of being involved in multiple unexplained and mysterious incidents throughout the sector. Even central processing admitted such reports were little more than rumors based on unconfirmed anecdotes, but such rumors had attracted attention and inquiry from the Maxalks. Anytime the Maxalks became interested in events in Thoranan space, central processing went on full alert. The Krestang are engulfed in a civil war that has consumed their entire society and resources. Why would any Krestang with access to a star carrier bother to raid this site? Surely they would use a star carrier to gain a tactical advantage over other clans.
Because, Liv-426 explained with an emotional overlay of lecturing a dim-witted subordinate, they seek a strategic advantage. If a group of Krestang have access to one of our star carriers, and they have somehow discovered how to make use of elder technology that has evaded the understanding of all other species in this galaxy, they could become extremely dangerous and powerful.
They could dominate their society and quickly end the civil war, Thex-1138 nodded in appreciation.
They might dominate us, Liv-426 warned. The Maxalks would look favorably on anyone who brought them a significant technology advantage over the Rindaloo. The lizards have long chafed at being under our control. This group of Krestang could free themselves, become our peers.
There was no mistaking the emotional overlay of anger, and a touch of fear.
Central processing will expect us to stop the lizards before this gets too far. The object they took, what was it?
We do not know. Responding to a sharp look, Thex-1138 added, we know the configuration of the object. We do not understand its function. The object did not respond in any meaningful way during extensive testing, nor did identical objects at other locations. The Bosphorak. Thex-1138 glanced sideways at Liv-426 to gauge her reaction. Believe the device creates or maintains a connection to other spacetimes.
The Bosphorak. Liv-426 was mildly surprised her companion had dared mention the rival species.
They have in many cases made more progress in understanding elder technology than we have, Thex-1138 said warily. When Liv-426's mouth tightened in anger, Thex-1138 hastened to add, even the Maxalks consult the Bosphorak on matters of elder artifacts. Liv-426 looked away. After a moment, she nodded almost imperceptibly.
The bird brains do have their uses. Thex-1138, I would not speak so admiringly about the Bosphorak on an open channel. Central processing might not understand the subtle difference between you appreciating specific accomplishments of the Bosphorak and your assessment of their superiority.
Their superior understanding of elder technology is a fact. We must first deal with facts if we are to surpass the Bosphorak, Thex-1138 stated calmly, no longer concerned about Liv-426's reaction. Understanding our enemy is the key to defeating them. Neither of them thought it odd that their supposed allies, the Bosphorak, were considered more of an enemy than their official opponents, the Jarraptha and Torgala.
That is a true, if dangerous, notion.
Liv-426 then pinged their pilot.
Nick, 1701, prepare for takeoff. We will be leaving. There is nothing more we can learn here.
Acknowledged. Nick, 1701, responded from the cockpit.
There is one thing we do know, Thex, 1138.
Liv-426 looked through the dome to the nearly black sky above.
What is that?
We know what the attackers were seeking, and we know the one here.
She pointed to the wrecked artifact where the object had been cut away.
It's not the only one.